Hey gang, quick bit of housekeeping for you before we start the show. And this is only relevant to those of you who listen to us on the Apple Podcasts app or via Apple. So if you don't, move along, as the great Obi-Wan Kenobi would say, nothing to see here. But if you do listen to us via Apple, listen carefully, particularly if you're an old school listener of the show. Before we became the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN, when we were the NFL show, you would have got the show updated when we moved without having to do a thing. But that's because the old show had a divert put on it. So to check, you're subscribed to the new feed because the old one is going to go pretty soon. Check out the Nat Coombs Show. Search for it on the app via the podcast browse section or the store section if you're looking on the desktop, and find our show and see if it shows whether you're subscribed or not. If you are, great, you're on the right feed. If you're not, hit subscribe and delete the old one. So head on over, not in your library, but actually onto Apple. Search the Nat Coombs Show. Make sure you're subscribed to the feed that you find. Simple. Good luck. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN as we get set for the 2020 draft, gang. And who better but our resident college expert, Ben Isaacs, in the house to get you ready. 10 things you need to know about the draft. This isn't 10 things that you'd be better off knowing, 10 things that I think your intelligence on the draft will be improved if you know. It is 10 things you need to know. And Ben has worked tirelessly on that. So he is coming away very, very soon. In this lockdown period, we are dropping episodes thick and fast. So if you've missed a few, just holding out for our regular Thursday episodes, head on back and you'll find chats with Stig Abel, the presenter of Front Row. Great pod on books, American sporting books that he recommends. Some really good deep diving stuff with Iron Mike as well. Marek Larwood dropped by. Jay Bell too. Some really good episodes over the last couple of weeks for you to go and enjoy, in case you might have missed one or two of those, to keep you occupied, to feed your mind. Speaking of which, all about the draft today, and Ben Isaacs will get you set. Benedict Isaacs, how is life?
It's pretty good, all things considered. You know, working hard from home, which is unusual.
Yeah, come
for me.
On. Working hard. I've been seeing the comedy skits you've been rolling out on various social media accounts in relation to your day job, and that doesn't look much like work to me.
Also, you shouldn't track the number of videos I've been watching from ESPN Player, kind of watching games from last season, scouting players for the draft. Well, exactly, it is research. But it depends on whose time I'm doing that and who's paying me to do that at particular times.
It is a hard knock life. That is what it is. I mean, how do you feel about the virtual draft? I mean, this is now officially the virtual draft, which doesn't make a huge amount of sense to me because it's still actually happening. So I'm not sure how comfortable I am with that definition to begin with anyway.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah. I'm sick of the word virtual being used when something is genuinely taking place. Yes.
Yes.
sure. Yeah. I think it's good. Obviously, it means that you and I are not there in Las Vegas while this happens, which might be better for Vegas that we're not there.
Probably. Given the last time we were there, I think that is a reasonable assumption. I'm so disappointed. I found a picture of that horse racing game. Did I send it to you?
You did.
Which I was so looking forward to playing again. And what would have happened realistically is that we would have found this, and for the benefit of our listeners who have no idea what we're talking about, back in the day, years ago, God, 15 years ago, wasn't it? Pretty much. You and I were in Las Vegas with friends, and we ended up finding this horse racing game, which is, some of you will have seen it out there, which is a kind of flat top table that you can sit around, and coin-based betting. Although, did it take notes as well? I can't remember.
It probably did.
It probably. I know there's a maximum bet. There's probably some loon that bets 500 and raised on it. But it was for low rollers like us, Benny.
Yeah.
And it is horse races. So you basically back your horse. They'll have different odds, and they just go around a mechanical track. So it's kind of Sabutio meets those ice hockey games. Is that my describing it particularly?
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. I think it was in a kind of like a sort of bubble.
Yes.
With kind of a table around it. But it was the fact that it was mechanical. I know people will kind of bet on like video horse races. Mm. And to me, there's no soul to that. Whereas these little mechanical horses, you kind of almost develop like backstories for them. At the start of the race, it would come up with the odds for each individual horse. And it's not like, oh, horse one is always like the favorite. It would all kind of mix up. but you've really kind of developed a strategy. Like, oh, you know, I think number two is due.
We had a system.
What I think we discovered was that, if you were placing kind of sensible bets, you know, like you say, probably some lunatic spending $500, you know, per race, but you'd be putting these small bets on, and there would be a little kind of community of people sat around this thing because there were stools around it, and you would be brought your drinks, which were technically free because mm-hmm. they want you to, you know, stay in the casino, obviously. And you would give a tip. And I think we figured out that the cost of the drink, if you were buying it at the bar, would be more than the tip plus the money that we were betting.
That's right. Yeah.
We were making a profit, technically. But it was an alcohol profit.
Yeah, so the best kind.
Yeah.
And we spent, I mean, hours is an understatement. So if we had to bring this full cycle, if the draft had happened in Vegas, as was originally planned, I think we'd have probably missed the opening night. We would have been sort of rolled in around pick number 20, because we would have been otherwise engaged. Well, speaking of which, the draft is, of course, all the rage and everything we are focusing on right now. So we figured who better to get us set for the 2020 draft than our own college expert and old friend Ben Isaacs. And you've put together a top 10 things to know about the draft. Now, these aren't necessarily any kind of power rankings. We're not going to go 10 to 1, anything like that. These are just 10 key things you guys out there need to know to get you set for the draft. Starting with how strange the draft will be, or otherwise, because as we alluded to at the top, the virtual draft, the fact that everybody's going to be remote, there's no Vegas, there are no gondolas wheeling the players. Now, that would have been strange to the podium. Goodell's not going to get booed. All of the usual pomp and ceremony and razzmatazz is completely pared down for obvious reasons and completely the right reasons. So how is that going to impact our viewing pleasure of the draft? Is it for you, Ben, going to make it more... It's going to be more intriguing, I guess, to see how it plays out. But when you scratch away the cosmetic surface, we're going to be left with exactly the same intrigue and wheeling and dealing and surprise and all the most important attributes of a draft, aren't we?
Yes, spot on. This is my take from it is the draft won't be weird despite the world being weird. Mm. If your experience of the draft is watching it on TV, your experience will be pretty much the same as it would have been in any other year. One thing to bear in mind is the draft has only been televised since 1980. ESPN went to the NFL and said, look, we've got to fill space. Can we televise the draft? And once the NFL bigwigs had stopped laughing, they were like, yeah, sure, knock yourself out. No one wants to watch it, by the way. So, yeah. And obviously ESPN turned it into a major television event. So that's relatively new. The idea of it being on location has only been going on since, I think, 2015 when they did it in Chicago. So this, you know, this thing of there being hundreds of thousands of people there and, you know, the NFL experience and all that sort of stuff, that is very, very new. For decades, it just used to be a bunch of men in a very smoky room making decisions, calling back to kind of head office to check on picks of players that they'd only seen like once. So it's not going to be that strange. It's going to be harder for the teams because they've not been able to do the sort of in-person assessments that they would like to do. Mm. But most of these assessments are done through tape. They are done through people talking to each other, and all that stuff will be just the same. We know that they always would have the top players there in the green room waiting to be picked. And in effect, they're still doing that because they're shipping high-end cameras to a number of top picks. So you will get the instant reaction. You'll be right in their living room, surrounded by their family, celebrating as they get picked. They will be making all these video calls. The experience of the viewer, unless you are going to attend the draft in person, is going to be the same. And as someone who just enjoys seeing how the media covers different things, I'm really intrigued to see the way they present it. I think it's going to be great. It's going to be an interesting novelty. And I know that some people within the NFL are not happy that the draft is taking place on schedule. I am very happy it's taking place on schedule because it is something you can do right now. Most other sport things you cannot do right now. If there's one thing we can do, let's do it.
Well, this is it. They're such creatures of habit and process. Understandably so, it's not a criticism, but you know, the NFL is so acutely focused on this is how we do things and due diligence and detail that you could understand why there are a fair amount of personnel, front office and coaching, obviously, in particular, who are not exactly wild about the way it's played out in, and it's going ahead on time, despite the limitations they've had in terms of that scouting process. And I guess that will be particularly significant for those teams that tend to sneak value in the later rounds. So I can kind of get that. In terms of the technology side, if Freddie Kitchens was still the Cleveland Browns head coach, would they be using House Party for their draft room?
I mean, but you know, the other thing that I'm interested in is seeing which players and coaches film themselves in portrait mode, even though it's going to be on TV, and that will infuriate me. Nice. That will drive me absolutely crazy. If, for example, if I was a coach or a GM, and I was going to speak to a player, and we were going to do it via your video chat app of choice, and they were in portrait mode, and I was there in landscape mode, filling my screen, because it's something you want to do on a computer. I don't want to interview a top prospect just over the phone screen. I would really, that would be like a low Wonderlic score. Just, you've gotta go in landscape mode, not portrait mode, if it's gonna be on a big screen.
A very good point. They make the pick and then panic that, oh my God, he doesn't understand. Hopefully someone will, I'm not advocating any kind of hack, obviously, but hopefully a kind of internal family hack where, the child of a grizzled, front office, or coach, or yeah, because thinking about who's going to get interviewed, actually, yeah, it'll almost certainly be the player, so it won't be as funny. But if, for example, Belichick's screen got hacked with dinosaur wallpaper, that's the kind of thing I'd like to see. Okay, so a good start. Things are going to be, as you quite rightly say, normal in many respects, despite the surreality of the execution of the draft and the weird world we're living in right now. Okay, let's start with, well, let's move on, I should say, to the top three, because there's a lot of stuff flying around here, theory flying around here in terms of what might happen. So Burrow's going to go number one, whatever happens. I guess the only intrigue there is to whether the Bengals decide to deal the number one pick away, and realistically, the Dolphins, who have three first rounders, of course, step in and take Burrow. So the idea of Burrow going anywhere other than number one is crazy town. He is in most sports books I'm seeing, he's 100-1 on, right? So I don't think he's going to drop, but it's whether the Bengals decide to deal or not. And in your mind, Ben, and this is your second point, you don't think the top three are going to change, whoever ends up taking them. Or are you saying that the players will go 1, 2, 3 advertised, but the teams might change around?
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to see Joe Burrow at 1, Chase Young at 2, and Jeff Okuda at 3. Now, as you say, the Bengals could deal that pick. At the moment, that doesn't look like it's going to happen, but these things can change very, very quickly. I would say we're looking at Burrow, Young, and then Okuda. Let's say everyone at the top of the draft stands pat, and you've got Cincinnati, Washington, and Detroit taking those three players. Everything then rests on the New York Giants at number 4. Now, if people are to be believed, they are leaning towards Isaiah Simmons, who's a very versatile linebacker from Clemson, but it's going to depend how much they like him, whether they are going to turn down offers of teams wanting to trade up to that number 4 spot, whether someone is going to be desperate for a quarterback and will go up, or whether someone desperately wants Isaiah Simmons because he is absolutely fantastic.
There's a lot of buzz about him. You've raved about him. So just on the teams in the hunt for a quarterback, so just below the Giants, 5 and 6 are two of them, right? The Dolphins and the Chargers are widely expected to take a quarterback in the first round, particularly the Dolphins, because the the picks that they have. Elsewhere, you've got the Jags, the Raiders have been connected with a quarterback as well, because the ongoing narrative that Gruden just doesn't rate Carr, will be looking. So they could, we'll talk about the other quarterbacks in a minute. Jordan Love's probably the only other one that's going to go in the first round, right? But the suggestion here is that let's say it's the Dolphins and they absolutely, whether it's Tua or a Herbert, right? But either one who are expected to again go quite closely, they want to lock them in, then they might be tempted to trade up to the Lions at 3 or the Giants at 4 to lock that player in. Is that the rationale?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Lions, unless they get a fantastic offer, I think are going to go with Jeff Okuda, because he is a shutdown corner, had a fantastic season for Ohio State, and is such a massive upgrade.
But they could get Okuda at 5, couldn't they? So say the Dolphins flip with him. The Lions could gamble that, well, Okuda's going to drop to us anyway. Or do you think then, does Okuda come into play for the Giants, do you think, if he falls?
Yeah, I think he would come into play for the Giants. I can imagine Okuda not dropping as far as 5. I mean, obviously, it's trading down is great because you accumulate picks. This has been the Patriots, MO. For a very long time. This is what Belichick likes to do. He likes to trade down, accumulate those picks, because if you want to build a great team, you have to build it through the draft. You don't build it through free agency. The more draft picks you have, the more chance you have of hitting, because we know for a lot of these picks, it's a lottery. If you've got more lottery tickets, you've got more chance of winning the lottery. But a lot of teams don't have as much faith in their ability to pick the right players as the Patriots do, and for good reason. So the Detroit Lions may feel, okay, let's go with this absolutely outstanding player at number 3 rather than move down, potentially miss out on him, and not hit on the impact players. So I would, if I were the Lions, I would stick with Okuda personally.
Okay, so it is a lot of different permutations could happen, is what we're saying, as is often the way, of course, but it is interesting, your next point, which is the best player won't go number 1. So even though Burrow is going to go number 1, whoever he goes to, you don't think he's the best player in the draft?
No, not even, I'm going to say not even close, and I'm going to stick with it, not even close. If you said to me, right, we're going into this draft, who do you feel is the most likely to have a long all-pro career? With no hesitation, I would say Chase Young, who's an edge rusher from Ohio State, who I think Washington would be crazy to pass on at number 2. There's been no indication that they will do anything other than take Chase Young. They don't seem to want a quarterback, despite potentially the evidence showing that they need one. Chase Young is pound for pound the most talented player in this draft. It's like if you wanted to kind of chisel like a 4-3 defensive end, he is what you would end up with. He's very powerful. He's very quick. He's one of the best pass rushers to come out of college football in a long time. He can do pretty much everything. You know, you'll see these kind of the swim moves and the chop and all these things that get a player on the defensive side through the offensive line. He seems to have every move that you could have. He reminds me a lot of Javon Kurse, and possibly better than Kurse. He is the best player. That's not to say if I was the Cincinnati Bengals, I would take Chase Young, because I think what they need more than anything is a franchise quarterback to build a team around. But the best player is Chase Young.
It is fascinating when you think about the amount of quarterbacks that have been drafted. Let's take the last decade in the first round, high in the first round, that haven't worked out. I mean, at all, let alone ones that are kind of serviceable. So, you know, Blake Bortles, pick number 3, if you remember back in the day. Mm-hmm. You've got Trubisky, pick number 2.
I knew you were going to say Trubisky. Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, Tannehill latterly has kind of come together. I guess that's starting to play out. But, I mean, if we'd had this conversation this time last year, obviously not. Mariota, Jameis Winston is not a starter in the NFL right now.
When these names are even kind of like late first round picks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, these are top end picks. The hit rate is very low.
It is, and I obviously understand why, because if you do hit, then and you're hitting at the kind of luck level. But again, that's a kind of generational thing. If you think, I mean, Lamar's emerged, of course, but then you offset that with Josh Freeman, right? Freeman,
yes,
you know, top 20 pick. Brandon Whedon was a top 20 pick, wasn't he? Yeah, was definitely a first round pick. Jake Locker, you know, went 8 to the Titans back in the day. So there are lots and lots and lots of examples. Christian Ponder, I'm pretty sure, was a first round pick. There are a lot of examples of first round quarterbacks going people reaching for them because of this desire to get a quarterback, and it is too much of a gamble. So I appreciate it's different right at the top of the draft. But not always, as you rightly say, and as we say, Blake Bortles going number 3, a case in point. Are we sure that Joe Burrow is this Andrew Luck type player, which as close as you can get to a sure thing, he is that quarterback? Or is there, in your mind, an element of risk? Because if there is an element, always risk, but I mean a significant element of risk that he will be. Because if there is, then why aren't you making the safer bet if you're going to get an all-pro 10-time Pro Bowler, by the sound of it, that Chase Young's going to be?
Because if, let's say you're the Bengals and you decide, okay, Chase Young is the safer bet. We can build defensive line around him. He's going to be fantastic. And they pass on Burrow, and Burrow has a great career. That's all they will hear. Mm-hmm. Unless they win multiple Super Bowls and Chase Young has like 2 or 3 Super Bowl rings as a Bengal, they will always hear, you should have taken Joe Burrow.
But then if Burrow is Akili Smith and Chase Young is Warren Sapp, then the flip, the reverse applies.
But not as much, because people will feel like, well, everyone wanted Joe Burrow at number one. That it wasn't the Bengals reaching. It wasn't that the Bengals fell in love with some guy who everyone thought was okay. It would be, okay, well, you know, everyone feels he's the number one pick. People might trade up to get him. They won't get so much blame if they don't get him. Whereas if he doesn't work out, people will kind of forgive them. They'll be like, oh, same old Bengals. But yeah. Everyone wants Burrow. We'll get onto this, but he's not the best quarterback in the draft. So there is a lot of risk.
Let's go to the next point then.
Okay.
So if he's not the best quarterback in the draft, he's not the best player in the draft. You're saying not the best quarterback in the draft either. So I'm assuming, joining the dots here, you're saying Tua is the best quarterback in the draft, but because of the injury, there's just too much risk involved.
Yes. The best quarterback is definitely Tua Tagovailoa. Does this mean he is the safest and most sensible pick? Probably not. Teams haven't been able to evaluate him in person as much as they would like. Michael Lombardi, on his podcast says that, Tua has failed at least one physical for teams at the moment. Something that, Lee Steinberg, his agent, I believe he's your agent as well, Nat, so we interest there.
I have a kind of unofficial agreement, Steinberg and I. Yeah.
he's denied this. The thing is, with all of these stories about teams being all in on Tua, teams saying they don't want Tua, take these with a pinch of salt, because a lot of this stuff gets put out there by certain teams.
Yeah.
That they don't, they would, like, let's say the Dolphins are going to pick Tua Tagovailoa. They would much rather put out a lot of information that indicates that he's not going to be up to it.
Sure.
And that people shouldn't try to trade up. They would want to talk that down. So you can never read too much into it. Obviously, over the past few seasons, Tua Tagovailoa, his achievements on the field have been pretty much as good as any college quarterback of recent decades. We're talking, the likes of sort of Peyton Manning, of Andrew Luck, those sort of long college careers where they have just put up outstanding numbers, have shown an incredible attitude, have won so many games. He is up there with those. However, it's that injury history. So he is a risk. I don't think it's the biggest risk in the world, because there is so much talent there. The upside is huge. And I think a team that picks Tua, again, it won't be used as a stick to beat them with. Oh, I can't believe you wasted the pick on Tua Tagovailoa, one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time. Someone is going to take that risk. And I think it is a risk worth taking, because if it works out, then I would firmly expect him to be a better NFL quarterback than Joe Burrow, and a better NFL quarterback than all the other quarterbacks that are out there getting lots of buzz, some good, some bad.
You see, the fact that you're saying that does get me again worried about this idea of Burrow at one. And I know you had this in Remarkable Season that you documented so well on our pod during last year. But as you pointed out, it was a standout season for him in an otherwise reasonably good career, right? He suddenly kind of emerged and broke through. And I think just hearing that, saying if Tua stays fit, he's going to be have a significantly stronger career. I take your argument completely, and I get it, and I know it will happen that way, but I would, if Chase Young is a player that everybody's saying he is, then I would be thinking about that. So Justin Herbert is again a safer bet if we're using that terminology, right? The Oregon quarterback. So let's say the Dolphins decide they don't want to gamble on Tua. They go Herbert at 5. The Chargers don't want to gamble either. So Tua falls down the board. How far does he fall? Is that going to be the Jags at 9? Is it going to be, will the Raiders look at him at 12? And if they don't, I mean, who after that, you've got, I mean, it's, well, the Raiders obviously have got a couple of picks, as do the Jags. What am I talking about? The Jags have got 2 as well, don't they? So they might even, I mean, is it possible Tua could drop down to the low teens, early 20s?
I wouldn't imagine him sliding out of the top 10. Let's say though, in that scenario that you've brought up, that the Dolphins go for Herbert and the Chargers decide they don't want to take a risk on Tua, then it might be that there is information out there that the public isn't privy to, but general managers do know, that has put off a lot of teams. If it just happens to be that when it comes to it, Miami and Los Angeles Chargers just get a bit gun shy, then somebody will swoop in. I mean, you can just imagine the Raiders trading up to make sure they get in the top 10 and take Tua. I can imagine the Jags taking Tua at number 9, unless, like I say, there is very, very good reason. I wouldn't expect him to slide, but if he does, there might be more to it than we realize.
Gotcha. Okay, next up then, your fifth point, starting to get into the wide receivers. And if we think Tua is, in terms of raw talent, the best quarterback in the draft, is Jerry Jeudy the best wide receiver in the draft?
He's the best athlete in the draft, full stop. Chase Young is the best player because I think he's just so ready to go, and I think you'll just plug him in and he'll be just insanely good for a long time. Jerry Jeudy is the best offensive player in the draft. It just happens to be that you're going to get good wide receivers in this draft. You don't have to kind of put a premium on Jerry Jeudy, all things considered. He is absolutely freakish. The best comparisons would be Odell Beckham Jr. and Randy Moss. I'm not saying he's as good as Randy Moss, but he could certainly be as good, if not better, than Odell Beckham Jr., but without a lot of the baggage that he comes with. He's absolute. Every route is so crisp. Now, admittedly, at Alabama, they are incredibly well-drilled, but he finds these spaces. He's always exactly where the wide receiver, where the quarterback wants the wide receiver. He's always exactly there, and he's frequently double-teamed. Now, Alabama had great wide receivers last season, and he just happened to be the best of them. It wasn't a one-man band, but he's got it. He's got it all. He's a good physical presence when it comes to contested catches, even though he's not as big as a lot of the others. He's got just incredibly soft hands. When he catches the ball, he can make one cut. It just seems to stop for like a split second. The defender's on him, and he changes direction, and he's gone to the house. Mm. You know, he turned like a 15 a 15-yard pass into kind of a 60-yard touchdown. He's a very brainy player on the field. He's fast, like really fast. He's a tough guy. I am absolutely in love with Jerry Jeudy. He is my favorite player in the draft. If there's any player that I watch, it's Jerry Jeudy. Someone is going to get him. You're going to, again, you can imagine him being like such a raidery player in terms of that top end speed, you know, running vertical routes, that he's going to be a huge upgrade for whoever gets him. I've seen him mocked to the 49ers. You know,
yeah, that would make sense, wouldn't it? And also the Raiders just above them, as NFL.com were reminding us, or reminding me certainly in one of the mock drafts recently, I think it might have even been your friend Bucky Brooks made the point. The Raiders, obviously looking for a receiver anyway, but Gruden is a former receiver's coach, values very much the attributes you've just outlined there, particularly the route running. So I think that is an intriguing play. Is he the best receiver in the draft? He's the best athlete in the draft, but I'm seeing a lot of mocks, CeeDee Lamb going ahead of him. I'm seeing some people suggesting that Ruggs as well. I mean, some mock drafts, and I know this is the point, there are a gazillion mock drafts, and sometimes people are just trying to do something outlandish and controversial to cut through the noise, but it is in your mind, he is 100% going first out of the receiver.
Well, I would say he's 100% the best receiver in the draft. Whether he goes first, I don't know. But I think if we have, I mean, I would expect him to, but sometimes a team will just fall in love with a particular player. It might be the coach develops a particular rapport with them, something that we've not been able to see kind of in evaluations at this point, where if the quarterback and that receiver are in the same room and they really hit it off, that might be enough to kind of tip them over the edge. But I think if we pick up this particular conversation in 3 years' time and we look at this wide receiver class, I think we'll be saying, yep, Jerry Jeudy was the best one in the 2020 class.
But you think, and this is your next point, it is the strongest class for many a year. So I mentioned CeeDee Lamb. Jeudy, of course, we've talked about. We'll mention Ruggs as well. There's Justin Jefferson from LSU that people are projecting could go in the first round. I mean, how many receivers do you think might go in the first round?
I think we could be looking at maybe 7.
Wow.
I think it could be a really, the first day may be the day of the wide receiver. There are just so many guys who I would expect in the first 2 rounds. At some point, people might reach, but because it's so deep for wide receivers, you can get exceptional wide receivers in the second round. You know, you said Justin Jefferson. There's a guy at Wake Forest, Sage Surratt, who is a really great kind of like yards after catch guy. There's Michael Pittman Jr. at USC, Brandon Ayuk at Arizona State, Laviska Shenault at Colorado. Before you get into kind of the quote-unquote bigger names, the T. Higgins at Clemson, Devonta Smith, Alabama, CeeDee Lamb, like you say, of Oklahoma, and Henry Ruggs III, also at Alabama.
Always drop the third? Is that a...
I just think that Henry Ruggs III, that is a name I respect, you know? Like, if that was... We've been given advice when we were naming our daughter, put doctor in front of their name, and would you trust them to kind of cut you open? And Dr. Henry Ruggs III, I'd be like, I don't even need, like, to
an anesthetist. Like, he sounds like the baddie in a mid-80s screwball college comedy. He runs a sort of alpha, beta, gamma.
He's from the bad fraternity. Yeah,
yeah, he's definitely the bad dojo.
They're the rich dojo kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so yeah, Dr. Henry Ruggs III, who's a kind of Tyreek Hill kind of guy. He's the fastest guy in the draft. Some people may, I mean, Jerry Jeudy's fast, but Ruggs is faster. Mm. But Jerry Jeudy has as the you know, kind of the better all round package. But if you need a receiver and you've got a pick in the first 2 rounds, then you can get a wide receiver 1 if that's what you're looking for. I love this wide receiver class. It is so deep. I can't think of a better class. Like the 2014 class in hindsight was fantastic. You had you had Odell Beckham Jr., you had Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins, Kelvin Benjamin, Brandon Cooks. And that was also the year that Jarvis Landry was picked, Allen Robinson. So, you know, that was a great one, 2014, that wasn't, people said it was good at the time, but it's like in hindsight now, it's like, oh wow, that was so deep. At the moment, everyone is hot on this wide receiver class, and with good reason.
So the Dolphins, Ben, we talked about them having three first round picks, which is huge collateral. It gives them a lot of wiggle room in all kinds of ways. The overall number of picks they've got in the draft is 14. And it's slightly deceptive because they're 3-7 of those 14. So 50% of them are in the fifth, sixth or seventh round. But nevertheless, they're stacked at the top as well, because alongside those three first round picks, they got two in the second round and a third rounder as well. And they're obviously quite high up in the rounds, 5, 18 and 26 and then 39 and 56. So five in the top 60, the Dolphins could really fill their boots here.
Yeah. And it's five in the top 60, six in the top seven. They can get elite level players. So I'm expecting them to draft Tua Tagovailoa, but they can also get alongside him, the likes of Josh Jones, who's an offensive tackle out of Houston, who's absolutely fantastic. Just sort of thing that they need to protect Tua. They could get Clavon Chaisson, who's an edge rusher out of LSU. They could also end up picking up DeAndre Swift, running back from Georgia. Depending on how they move things around, they could even get Isaiah Simmons, who we've already talked about. So I would expect them in those first three picks to get a quarterback, potentially a running back, and either an offensive lineman or an edge rusher. But the thing to know about those three players, it won't just be kind of make weight guys. These would be elite level players. And I think that if they have a good draft, and, you know, it's easier said than done, if they have a good draft, they haven't just improved. They have set themselves up for a decade of success as far as I'm concerned. They can just restock that roster and have key parts, young players who can go on to have Pro Bowl careers.
We talked about the first round quarterbacks. Is there any chance at all that one of the teams that we've talked about, well, specifically, I think Miami or the Chargers, rather than use for one of their first round picks on one of those quarterbacks, goes a little bit further down? Because there are a few others in the mix as well that could potentially be starting. If you think about the Dolphins in particular, you've got Fitz for another year at least, and Josh Rosen's still in the frame, right? It's, you know, it's not outside the realms of possibility that they might look at a more developmental prospect, right?
They could. I mean, there were guys out there, but Tua Tagovailoa is such a talent that I think they would always wonder, what if? In fact, my number eight point is that the two most intriguing quarterbacks share a name. So people have probably heard of Jordan Love. He's been mocked to the Patriots and Packers a few times. Now he's good, but imagine following Brady or Aaron Rodgers. The Packers would be a better fit for him because at least he can learn behind Rodgers for a few seasons.
Saints as well would be linked with, right? So throw Brady
for him. I mean, you know, so people who know quarterbacks, teams that have got fantastic quarterbacks or have had fantastic quarterbacks really like the guy. He does throw some awful passes. Now, when he's good, he's being compared with Patrick Mahomes. But when he's bad, it reminds me of some of those terrible passes that Favre used to throw. Now, I'm not comparing him to Brett Favre, because Favre could do so much. But you know those bad throws, you think, why did he throw that? That was just completely unnecessary. He does those. The other Love plays in the same conference as Jordan Love, who's plays at Utah State. Josh Love is at San Jose State. They're both in the Mountain West. Now, Josh Love, he might not even get drafted, or he'll be a really late sleeper pick. He's great under pressure, but he's undersized. He's not physically gifted. He's kind of like a Kyle Allen type. And I keep wondering, will someone reach for him? And I wouldn't bet against it. He's the sort of guy that if he gets into the right sort of scheme, he's with the right franchise, and with the right coaches, then he could be developed into a potential starter, which if you're able to get that sort of value, you know, on day three of the draft, then, you know, you're laughing. So watch out for the two Loves, I would say. My number nine point is that there's more talent in the first round than there was last year. It's not to say last year was weak, But if you do a kind of a general player for player comparison, like Nick Bosa was the best pass rusher last year. Is he better than Chase Young? No, Chase Young is better. Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow, I prefer to the quarterbacks who were taken in the first round last year. Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins. Jerry Jeudy's better than any wide receiver who was taken last year. In fact, Henry Ruggs III also might be better than all of those. And then you look at Jeff Okuda, the Ohio State cornerback who I said the Detroit Lions should take. He's better than any cornerback who was taken last year. Grant Delpit, who's a safety at LSU. It's really good if you're looking for people in the secondary this year. He's better than any safety who was picked last year. The running backs, I was not a big fan of last year, but DeAndre Swift of Georgia, he's certainly better than, say, Josh Jacobs last year. So at the top end of the draft, the elite talents, I would say this draft, hands down, is better than last year's. So if those are the players you're looking for, then this is a good time to have a top 10 pick.
Now let's sneak number 10 in. A running back, as you described to be a tiny running back.
He's tiny. I mean, he's measured at like 5'5". He says he's 5'6", which if you're an NFL player and you're kind of like pushing yourself up to 5'6", then you must be small. Yeah, exactly. Now, I want to mention him. So his name's JJ Taylor from Arizona because he's such an exciting player. Now, this isn't someone who is going to get picked on the first couple of days. There's a chance he will go undrafted. The ideal situation for a viewer is he ends up as a an undrafted rookie, free agent pickup, who ends up on Hard Knocks, and we get to sort of see him develop. You get to see all the other players pointing out that, yeah, you're not even 5'6". But he's just got wonderful moves. He's so much fun to watch. He's a really kind of slippery sort of player. He's potentially a huge player in fantasy. So this is why I wanted to bring him up. You've got to be aware of this guy, because if he does catch on with an NFL team and he is going to be playing next season, he's someone who you're going to pick up in a late round in your fantasy draft, and you could end up with the next Tariq Cohen or even Darren Sproles. He's that sort of player.
I pray.
If he can pull it off. Because obviously those are smaller guys who, again, to use the perhaps uncomfortable word, slippery, who just seem to kind of like get out of people's grasp.
Not allowed to use it a third time.
No, we'll stick with two. That's fine. He's that sort of guy. And I would say if you don't know a lot about him, which I'm going to guess is pretty much everybody listening to this, just go and seek out some JJ Taylor videos and you'll come away thinking, oh, this guy should get drafted. Obviously, in those highlight videos, you're not going to see the times where he's just, you know, stuffed at the line of scrimmage. But he's a very interesting player, especially if you play in multiple fantasy leagues.
Note the name down, JJ Taylor. I have a dynasty draft coming up, so I really appreciate that final bit of intel. Forget the other 9 points that helped me with my job. It's what helps me with the fantasy draft that I'm most interested in. Ben, superb work as ever. Enjoy the draft. I know you'll obviously be staying up for all of it. You'll be devouring round 7 as well.
Just
round 1.
Yeah, and I'll be kind of there with round 7 and then sort of telling people the next day, oh yeah, I've always been a huge fan of player I had to Google, you know, that sort of thing. But boasting, yeah, exactly. Like, oh yeah, I know this guy.
This blacket, you'll be exactly.
You know, he plays in a Division III college in Canada. I'm big up on that, yeah.
Been talking about it for years. Yeah. Fine work, bud. I know you've got our listeners all set for the big night, certainly, and over the course of the draft as well. Come back on the other side and talk us through how it went, what went down, who you think won, who you think didn't. It'd be great to get your perspective on that. So we will check in with you very, very soon.
That's fantastic. And it's going to be a great draft, even if we can't get near any mechanical horses.
Next time, we'll always have 2021, my friend. If that isn't in Vegas, I'm writing a letter to...
2021 is in Cleveland. That is set in stone.
No.
I've been to Cleveland. I got food poisoning. So
maybe Cleveland will have one of those horse racing. Casinos, are they legal in Cleveland?
I'm not sure, but I have to tell you this little Cleveland story. I went to LeBron James' final game as a Cleveland Cavalier, and it was in the NBA Finals. It was when the Golden State Warriors, they swept the Cavaliers, and I was there for game four. And earlier that day, I'd gone out and I'd wanted to see downtown Cleveland, and boy, that was not very exciting. But I went in this historic old shopping mall, basically. It was the sort of thing that is like a kind of, like, if it was in this country, it'd be a kind of Victorian shopping arcade. Looked beautiful from the outside. I went in, there were barely any shops that actually still existed. But there was a wedding taking place in this shopping mall on the stairs. And the priest was wearing a Notre Dame t-shirt, shorts and New Balance trainers. And their wedding was taking place.
Was Gronk getting married? Was that?
He would have worn one of those like t-shirts that looked like a tuxedo, though.
Yeah, of course you would.
People were not making this sort of effort.
You'd have the tuxedo painted on, boy's body paint.
Yeah. The bride and groom were dressed as you would expect the bride and groom to be, but a lot of the guests were not. And it was also taking place kind of in the food court. It was so bleak. And it's one of my takeaways from Houston, from Cleveland. Everybody was lovely in Cleveland, but downtown there was nothing to do. And I got food poisoning, either from a hot dog in the press box, at the NBA game.
Better and better.
At the NBA game, or it was at a barbecue restaurant, which was actually a nice barbecue restaurant. And I really hope it wasn't the barbecue restaurant, because if I end up back in Cleveland, I'm going back to that restaurant. So I've got to take that risk.
I'd like to point out ESPN has right holders in the States for the NBA. There is absolutely categorically no substantiation of Ben Isaacs' story just there. Just like to be very clear. Did you also notice before you got into the story, I said I was going to write to Roger Goodell. So I'm going to get my fountain pen out and write him a letter.
Signed Dr. Henry Rugg the Rugg the Third. Yeah.
With a stamp. I've got a seal. I'm going to seal it. Rugg's the Third seal. Cracking stuff at Tweets for a Bet is how you follow Ben on Twitter. Make sure you do, certainly. You'll be keenly tweeting throughout the draft, I'm sure, as well. So
I will.
I will expect you to be on point there, and I'm sure our listeners will be keeping their eyes peeled for the stuff you are pushing out. And we will see you on the other side. Take care, bud.
See ya. Enjoy the draft, guys.
Lovely stuff. Many thanks to Ben. Enjoy the draft Thursday night. We'll be dropping a review of the first round, possibly the first couple of rounds. That'll be Greg Brady and me, who are doing a broadcast of it. We will drop the pod off the back of that either the Friday, keep your eyes peeled, or definitely by the Saturday. So watch this space. If you're subscribed to us, it'll just ease into your podcatcher of choice without you having to do a thing. So make sure you are doing that. And incidentally, on that note, if you've got a bit of time on your hands, which I suspect one or two of you might, head on over to iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to us, leave a review. If you can, that helps us with our sponsors, with the algorithm, all that good jazz. If you like the show and you haven't had a chance to do that yet, now is your moment. Go and do that. We would really appreciate it. And hey, as I always say, makes Harry the producer a very happy man. All right, then. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.